Hello, Yukon. Welcome to Husky Nation News right here on WHUS Doors 91.7 FM. I'm your host, Sarah Larshani. We have a very special spring break episode for you guys, but first, just a simple disclaimer. From this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or licensee of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. I'm here with someone who I'm sure needs no introduction because he basically lives on UConn buy and sell and is involved with everything on this campus. Omar Tawe is a senior who recently organized a mental health awareness die-in. He's here to talk about mental health on the University of Connecticut's Stork campus. Hi, Omar, how are you?
I'm hanging in there. How about you, Sarah?
I'm doing all right. So this is kind of a bit of a serious topic, but to start off, explain to me what happened today. So for those of you who are listening in, this is a pre-recorded episode, and it's Wednesday the 13th of March, just for clarifications. So tell me what happened today.
Yeah, so we actually shifted away from the die-in idea. We kind of thought a little bit about it yesterday night while we were going through our last like planning steps of the demonstration, and we kind of thought, ooh, die-in, counseling and mental health services, maybe not the best combination. We don't want to trigger anybody. Obviously, we want to be cognizant of like the very, very broad spectrum of mental illness that people have at UConn, especially when we're talking about CMHS. So we actually switched the thing from a die-in to just a simple, we took quotes from people's responses that we solicited online, solicited in the not financial way. And then we put them on posters, what was like relevant and pertinent to our cause. And then we put them up and had people speak about their experiences with CMHS. So it was really, really cool, actually. I think it was it came together very, very well.
So what brought this idea on? Why did you sort of see a need to bring up the conversation of mental health on this campus?
Yeah, so partially it was related to just a friend of mine who I was speaking with, and I won't disclose her name, obviously, but we had a conversation maybe it was last Thursday or Friday about just like mental health. It was like ranting about, you know, like whatever things we cared about at the moment. But particularly what like sparked the like, oh, my friend is talking to me about it, and oh, it looks like we might want to do something about this on this campus. So I speak to a lot of people on a regular basis, and I'm always 100% if I'm anywhere at UConn, obviously. I'm like running around, going to class, going to meetings, going to whatever. And I interact with a lot of individuals. And on any given day, I talked to many different people about many different things. But in the past like week and a half, 2 weeks, it seems like the topic of mental health, at least in my perception of it, had just come up like unreasonably more than regular in conversations that I have with people. And I started to think, I was like, it's midterm season, like people are like very stressed out, and like I'm very stressed out. Like last week was easily one of the most stressful weeks of my life at UConn, and then this week just happened to just become more stressful. But with that topic in mind, I started thinking, I was like, interesting that there are not not that CMHS is like underserving students, but the fact that this topic is being very, very pushed to like the conversation in a lot of areas and spaces that I'm inhabiting. And I was like, okay, well, I've seen it at CMHS and I've had positive experiences with CMHS, but I've also had some negative experiences with CMHS. And the friend's conversation that I had last week with like Thursday or Friday, it was related to her inability to schedule her own appointments with CMHS. And that kind of like brought together like, oh, like I've experienced these things before. My friend is experiencing these things before. And a lot of the student body is just suddenly not hyper-focused on the topic of mental health, but it's been coming up a lot more. And it's not like it was not related to the lack of ability to kind of schedule appointments specifically at CMHS. So I posted on public forum, as anybody would normally, I mean, that's the point of the page, obviously, to have dialogue about whatever's going on. I posted referencing some statistic of mental health at UConn, and then I was like, I'm in the mood to protest, because I mean, I'm always in the mood to stomp around and like scream at the establishment. So that's how that kind of like came about,
okay,
at least in the preliminary stages.
Mm-hmm. So give me an idea of some of the things that you've heard, students expressing as it relates to mental health.
Yeah, so are you asking like on CMHS specifically, or just in general, like the broad UConn community?
You know, we can take it both ways.
Yeah, so I can talk about the UConn community as a whole beforehand. So UConn is in Storrs-Mansfield. Storrs-Mansfield is relatively far away from a lot of points of civilization, developed civilization.
It's pretty rural.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have a couple like resources around the area, but it really takes a car to go anywhere far off campus. It's midterm season. People are stressed out. It's also the spring, so like people are often stressed out because they want to hang out with their friends. The mood is starting to lighten up. The weather is starting to improve, and everybody's like, "I want to go outside. I like need to enjoy the weather, and I need to take care of myself." And the topic of self-care has come up a lot, especially in the past like year at UConn, because CMHS has been more adamant about making sure that students are open about talking about their mental health with their peers, with their faculty, with administration, and stuff like that. So, I see that a lot of students have been bringing this topic up, partly because the university has shifted away from it's not taboo to speak about your mental health anymore. Mm-hmm. In our day and age. And so a lot of students, obviously at this time of year, they're talking about mental health, they're talking about their problems, they're talking about the great things about I had a mental breakdown, then my friend comforted me. Like whatever, this happens like very, very frequently, especially at the college campus.
So casually. It's like, yeah, I had a mental breakdown.
Oh, yeah, that's the reality.
I think that's kind of telling to some of the experiences of a lot that we can just casually be like, I had a mental breakdown. And
I think it's as 2019 like is approaching where we are, whatever. And the time of year that we're not even the time of year, the time of like the world, like we are in 2019 and the context of the year that we're living in is very, very different from years previous. If we were having this conversation in 2009, it would look very different, obviously. I think that we satirize and we create humor around the mental illness that we suffer ourselves and our peers suffer and stuff like that because it's a coping mechanism. And satire is very, very efficient, I guess, as like a method of communicating information. So it is very, very, I guess it would be I would consider it like a decently okay coping mechanism for your mental health. So to avoid like referencing specific people's experiences that I've like heard in the past couple of weeks that made me kind of think, why am I hearing so much about mental health? It's just like the broad range of like, I'm pulling all-nighters in the library again. I'm so stressed out. Or like my family is like really stressing me out in addition to my schoolwork being starting to increase in its intensity and its quality and quantity and everything, everybody's working a lot at this point of the year. And then in addition, I have a lot of friends that are seniors, but they're still stressing out about jobs. We're all like ready to leave this university as seniors. And most of my friends don't really know what they're doing next year yet. And obviously like as seniors, it's part of our job this semester to figure that out if we already have not figured it out. But I think just like a combination of a lot of different factors. And that's not referencing the political climate that stresses a lot of people out. With like the LGBTQ+ community, there's a lot of things that are happening in the news that have been targeting their populations specifically. And that was maybe a bit more into like the fall, but these issues permeate through time. It's not like a standalone issue where, they like finished writing their press release about how much they want to take away the rights of LGBTQ+ individuals or like minority individuals will be affected more by this. It's done. It creates lasting impacts on students. And I think that we're seeing the manifestation of that a little bit, especially in the context of UConn. In the middle of nowhere, we don't have access to a lot of fun things necessarily that other universities do outside of the university. So we have a lot of programming for events. Like Subag does a lot of great things at UConn. WHUS programs a lot of events, for example, and they're not even charged with making sure students have fun per se. Mm-hmm. So I think that beyond the university, there's not a lot of resources for us to enjoy the way my peers maybe in Boston or my peers in New York City that are going to school there would have. So I think it's just a combination of different factors. And in all seriousness, we're all going through mental health problems at any given time. You know what I mean? Just because I look good on the outside doesn't mean I'm good on the inside.
You mentioned something about sort of it being a different time and sort of students today having to deal with some different pressures, and you kind of got into it a little bit, but walk me through as to, what are some of the conditions that, students or in your own experience are going through on a daily basis that might add to, because everybody goes through stress to some extent.
Yeah, exactly.
So where do we draw the line? And it's not to say that, it doesn't exist because it obviously does. But where do we draw the line of saying, okay, this is where it becomes a problem. These are the stressors that these students are going through on this scale that are making it so that, people are having mental breakdowns and we're also just casually talking about them.
Yeah. So I think there's a problem a bit with the way our society functions. And it's like people often assume that nobody, you don't need help until you call and ask for help, or like you kind of like raise your hand saying like, okay, mm-hmm. in whatever channel you do. So whether it's going to CMHS, asking a therapist, telling your friend, whatever channel you're going to utilize or vehicle you're going to utilize to get the help you need to kind of like just alleviate stress, whether it's like extremely high mental, extremely like difficult mental health problems or just minor. We have to call out for that. And a lot of people like myself are very, very overt, and I'm very like kind of extroverted. So I have no problem telling these kinds of things to my peers and my friends when I need help. But a lot of people on this campus are not like that. And that's just human nature. I mean, we're not all going to be extremely hyper extroverted like myself. And we're not all going to be extremely hyper introverted the way some individuals are. So I think that it's a multifaceted like problem, but just specifically at this university, we're in the middle of nowhere, almost. I mean, context-wise, relatively, we're in the middle of nowhere. And the fact that you have to wait to be almost called on to express your emotions and express your frustrations with something like that, I think it is limiting to students. Like, people rarely get help unless they need help. So I think that the conversation is open now at University of Connecticut. Like, we talk a lot about mental health, but just because we're talking about mental health doesn't mean somebody's going to open up and talk about it. So like going back to like the beginning part of your question, the fact that people are not open to talking about their own problems as much as they are to just being like, oh, cool, it's an open, like we all care about mental health. Like obviously everybody cares about mental health. We all want to make sure we're all sane and happy and healthy and et cetera. But demands of the University of Connecticut are increasing. It's not surprising that Ivy Leagues have extremely high, they have like volumes of students that are suffering from mental illness in a number of capacities. And when a university becomes more prestigious, it is symptomatic of that university becoming more prestigious, that students will have more mental illness. That's a fact. It's proven in research. It's proven in day-to-day life. When students are producing more and being held to higher standards, they are going to suffer from more consequences. And I think that the political climate also adds to this. So aside from the fact that like UConn is increasing its level of expectation, so a lot of my friends that got into UConn 4 years ago to the main campus probably would, not that they would not get in, but a significantly less proportion of them would probably get in if they were applying at this time. And it's because the standards are increasing for UConn students. Classes are becoming more difficult. Expectations are increasing. The amount of time you have to put into something to excel compared to your peers. And that's not even talking about the broader like expectation of having to be perfect in a world where image is everything. When you take it into like the larger context of like the United States and higher education in the United States, we are operating from a business perspective because, unfortunately, higher education is functioning on a business platform in a lot of ways. Both the University of Connecticut, but all universities are doing this. It's not just like a singular problem at one point. And because of that, we are expected to be perfect. You know what I mean? Like, as if you don't get an A in a class, then you're not doing well. If you get a B, then you're like subpar. That's not my belief, and that's not anybody's true belief. But the way society has become set up for us as students is such that we are deemed not good enough if we are not perfect. And it's symptomatic of social media, in my opinion.
I have two questions for you. And I want to start with one, which is you kind of mentioned how people don't reach out for help or there's this assumption that we don't reach out for help until we need it. Do you think that, you know, obviously we're a bit more open about talking to mental health, as you just mentioned, but do you think there's still some level of stigma? And I know the Black Student Association held one about, they held a conversation yesterday, I think. I didn't attend it, but it was talking about sort of minorities and dealing with mental health. So do you think that, one, and I might be pushing a little bit on the question, but do we still, as a society, do we still have a stigma? And do you think, you know, you mentioned LGBTQ earlier, do you think those stigmas, if they do exist, happen differently in various different communities?
Of course, yeah. So part of our conversation today during the demonstration that we did was focused on making sure that students of diverse and different backgrounds have resources that are catered to them. So not catering necessarily to every single individual, but LGBTQ+ folk suffer from mental illness at a different rate and usually at a higher rate, but in different ways compared to heterosexual identifying and cisgendered, et cetera, individuals. Just the same way, people of color suffer from inequalities that make them push them into mental illness in a way that it does not affect white people, for example. You are, as a minority, you are being differentially subjected to both things that will create mental illness and the stigma coming from family often. I'm from the Middle East, and when I first tried to go to CMHS to get help when I was a freshman, I told my mom about it, and she was like, what are you doing? Just like drink some green tea. I swear, she literally told me to get green tea, and I was like, okay, mom. And then she like sent me like a link to some like herbal like remedy, and I was like, we get it. Like, your mom gave you this when you had stress.
I resonate with that so much.
I know, and I'm like, the Arab mom really is trying to reach here, and it's understandable.
Olive oil,
olive oil on the forehead.
Like, just boil some herbs. It'll cure everything.
And like, the thing is, I understand that there's this, I understand that they come from this viewpoint of like, we lived in a country that was like very different from the United States. We didn't have like, even if they lived in the United States 50 years ago, it would be extremely different. But the fact that they come from like a background where mental health was never talked about, you know what I mean? Like in Lebanon, my parents, they grew up during a war period. They literally grew up in a war. And my dad always tells me like, yeah, I used to like just chill like and like pray that like my dad would be able to come back that day. And then my mom is like, yeah, we used to like sit in the basement of my building when they were like bombing or like whatever. And like, this is a common experience for a lot of Middle Eastern folk. And to them, that's like normal. So talking like, if that's normal to them, then talking about like, oh, I'm stressed out about school is a very, very foreign topic. They used to, their school systems were much tougher in a different way. My mom always references, she's like, oh, the French system that I went through school is like so tough and et cetera. And I understand she probably was studying copious amounts of time, but it's a different context now. But I think that as a result of that, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religion, ability status, a lot of other factors are coming into play to influence why people are not able to talk about mental health. And the conversation at UConn, I think, has changed because we are secluded from the influence from our parents to some extent, the influences of our families to some extent. But that being said, like yesterday at the BSA and Minority Health Matters discussion on mental health, there was a lot of people there that were discussing the fact that they didn't feel comfortable coming to mental health services or CMHS because their parents had deterred them from doing so. And it's not like their parents said, don't go, but their parents were like, you're crazy for thinking this. And like that term alone is like there's a different reason why we should not use that word. But do you understand what I'm saying? It's like the stigma is perceivably gone on the surface. And I think that's a step forward. But minorities handle and deal with situations very, very differently. So not only are they able to access the same kind of support that they need. So maybe somebody of of the majority, for example, I'm not going to put any labels on the majority, but somebody from the majority has issues that are easily addressed by CMHS because they are the majority. But then somebody else with very, very niche issues comes and CMHS cannot adequately serve them because they are not prepared with the correct resources to help that person. But like, why would CMHS, I mean, not why would, but they should, but it's unlikely that they will have those resources readily available for students like that. And I think that that's why the conversation has changed a little bit. Like, as students were suffering more, people are starting to acknowledge the fact that like some pockets of individuals suffer differently. But we all need help. Like, we are human beings. We suffer from everything.
I have a question about that, but I'm going to hold off for a second because I want to go back to something that you mentioned before. And you were kind of talking about this level of perfectionism. And I see another side of it where I feel sometimes students feel like they have to reach a certain level of perfection. And I'm very curious to sort of, you know, obviously this isn't a medical analysis. Yeah. This is sort of a personal experience kind of thing. But why is there this sort of need to reach this high level of perfectionism? Why is that something that I feel like I hear from so many people? Why is that so ingrained in part of the experiences of college students?
Yeah, so I think that we are exposed to media 1 bajillion, that's not even a number, but I will create that number that does not exist yet because that's how much more of a factor we are, how much more likely we are as 2019 millennials, Gen Z, whatever generation we're part of, to be exposed to images of perfection. So whether it's like body image issues that are like a completely different like side of the discussion very, they are part of the discussion, but they're like all the way over here when it comes to like the academic aspects of things. We see people online, on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, succeeding in all these ways. And nobody wants to share their downfalls on the internet. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I think that the way social media has created our minds. So, I mean, nobody does not use social media. Some people use Snapchat. Some people use Twitter. Some people use Facebook. Some use Instagram. Some use Reddit. But there is virtually nobody at this university that I have come into contact that does not utilize some of these
I think I met one person who said that they stay completely off of all social media. And to be honest with you, I'm impressed. I don't know how you do it, but...
one person. And, yeah. like, the percentage of students that really, really are able to do that, it's unlikely that somebody is able to kind of remove themselves off of that grid or not go onto the grid in the first place. So regardless of where you are, you're being shown images. Or if you're not being shown images, you're being shown dialogue. And all this, like, why would I go out of my way to say, like, oh, I failed an exam on Twitter? I mean, I satirize my own misfortunes, so that's
why.
Yeah, and I think it's hilarious if I fail. I mean, I don't really think it's hilarious when I fail an exam, but I'm gonna make a joke out of it. Haha. But
is that a coping mechanism?
It's a cope. It's definitely a coping.
Oh my god.
So
this just went from like a conversation on mental health to like a therapy session.
Yeah, right.
For Omar satirizing himself on Twitter.
I don't know where I was going with that.
We're not trying to make a joke out of mental health issues, but I think this sort of talks about some of the things that. I think it's a clear example of how we deal with some of the things that we can't wrap our heads around.
Exactly. So back to like the so most people will share about themselves on the internet, and if they do, or I mean, most people will share like on a not consistent basis. Mm-hmm. Some people are posting regularly, like myself. I share content on all my social media platforms on a regular basis. The average human being is maybe doing that, but maybe not. But there's an expectation that like when you share something, it should be something that is exceptional and not something that's average day to day. So I would not post a picture of me getting coffee just like I do every other single day of my life. I would post a picture of me one day a week getting going to Starbucks instead of like making coffee in my apartment. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. and that's like a very, very low level example. But it's something that like relates to the fact that we are putting a version of ourselves online that is very, very high standard. And so building off of that, we see people on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter that are so successful. They look great. They are financially stable. They are academically stable. Their relationships are perfect. They have great romances with their like significant others. And everything that we see about them is idealized and beautiful looking. And it's not to say that that's the reason why everybody holds themselves to a higher standard, but when we are constantly reminded of the perfection that everybody, that certain people are acquiring all the time, and we compare them to ourselves, it's almost like FOMO, but not FOMO. It's like, I'm seeing their successes, but they're not my successes. I must be doing bad in my life because I'm not succeeding the way they are. And that's just the reality of it. We, as human beings, we compare ourselves to each other so we can maybe have a better perception of what we should do to look better, or maybe have a better perception of why we are lacking in a certain area, and then work on that, whatever. And it's symptomatic of our human nature. It's just a fact. But social media has heightened the prevalence of issues within such contexts. And that's not to talk poorly about social media, because I use social media just as much as everybody else, if not bajillion, referencing that word again, times more than anybody else. But we have to be cognizant of the fact that, like, we should not be holding ourselves to the same standards. And so back to the academics thing, like social media in combination with parental stress, with financial stress, like we're living in 2019 where we're not sure we're going to get a job in the field of choice that we've been studying for 4 years. Like we're in debt now as students graduating from college, and we don't know if we're going to find a job. Our parents didn't live with their parents until they were 26 years old. That, you know what I mean? Like they moved out when they were 19 or 20. And like we're able to self-sustain. They would work like part-time job and pay off their college and like by working 10 hours a week for like 3 years during the summer. You know what I mean?
It was a different financial circumstance.
Exactly. So
I don't know about all that math.
Yeah.
But it was a financial.
Yeah, I guess
it was a different time.
Yeah. Arbitrary numbers. Yeah, I guess you're right. Maybe not
10 yeah, hours. 10 hours every,
maybe a bit more, but. Yeah, but nonetheless, it's a different context.
The, yeah.
I also speak in exaggeration all the time, as you probably already know. Not all the time, sometimes. Most of the time.
Okay. That went to like three different levels, and I'm not sure which one.
I'm not sure how ironic that was. I think it was ironic, but kind of coping mechanism. Okay.
Oh.
Therapy session with was.
Oh my God.
Yes. Can we discuss the question again? Because my brain has darted around 1 million times.
Well, we were talking about why people have to, why people feel. Now I forgot the question. No, yeah. I'm kidding. We were talking about why people hold themselves to this level of high standard of perfectionism. And you were talking about sort of the images online. Yeah. And then we got somewhere
a little bit
into financial stability, which is a valid point.
Exactly.
But let's backtrack a little bit. I think that was a great point, but there's something else that caught my attention earlier. We're like jumping back and forth.
That's okay.
And it was when you were talking about your parents, and sort of this idea of having lived in a war zone and having sort of not dealt with sort of expressing any level of mental illness. And I just find it almost difficult to wrap my head around sort of having those experiences and not having some level of either PTSD. I'm not diagnosing anybody. I don't know.
Of course, yeah.
But there has to be some level of traumatic experience. And so I almost wonder, is there a level of, you know, I mentioned we talk more about mental health illness, but does that ability to talk more about it not necessarily suggest that there's a high rise of mental illness, even though there have been studies that show that that is the case? But does it just mean that we're more open and we're more willing to sort of put these issues on the table, which just makes it seem like everybody has mental health issues, or a lot of people have mental health issues? So how do we sort of bridge that gap between a generation that might not have talked about it? And I don't want to speak for everybody, but of these two different trends of one acknowledging it and one in a place of saying, well, this doesn't exist, or we didn't deal with it.
I think it's happening slowly and surely. It's going to happen, fortunately for the younger generations. But it happens so slowly, like really, really, it's like a snail pace. I think that what we have to do is, it's not our job to do so, but I think we should take it as a responsibility to constantly work to educate the generations that came before us on the issues that face us. You know what I mean? Like, people like 30 years ago didn't have the concerns that people nowadays have, and that's why mental health was less of a concern to them. That being said, though, I would challenge that. I was actually having a conversation with somebody earlier today that maybe the fact that we talk about mental health more could be increasing the rates of mental health issues on this campus. I mean, not necessarily. I mean, I said on this campus almost mindlessly without even realizing it. Everywhere in the United States, you know what I mean? And I would disagree with such a comment, but the fact that we are more open about it could be or could be not influencing the fact that we have mental health issues. But I think back to the question about kind of like the generations before us, how do we address it? I think working to address it is very, very important, but it should not be done at the cost of your own mental health. Like, the irony there is quite simple. Like, you should not teach those before us. It's like taking the bird. It's like one person speaking for an entire community of individuals. Like, as a non-heterosexual identifying male, I don't have the right to speak on behalf of all non-heterosexual identifying males. But at the same time, I can, to some extent, have experiences that I share with them. So I'm referencing that just because, paralleling it with the mental health stuff. If I'm gonna try to talk to my parents about mental health, but talking to them about mental health is gonna make me more stressed out, then I should not talk about mental health with my parents. You know what I mean? It's like the irony is there, and it's gonna make it worse, in a way. And it should not be the job of individuals that are suffering from mental health issues to have to advocate for themselves. You know what I mean? Like, you should not call on any non-heterosexual identifying man to speak and educate you on X, Y, and Z issues because he's your friend. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Does that analogy make sense? I think I jumped a bit back and forth, but at the very end, I kind of explained why I brought that context in. Yeah.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we are running out of time. So is there anything else you obviously, we can have this conversation for ever, but well, not forever, but for it's a much more comprehensive conversation. Well, neither of us can speak today. But is there anything else you feel you want to get out there, or you want to say?
Yeah, so I think the conversation is changing, the dialogue is really shifting in a certain direction, and I think all we can really, really do as students is make sure that we support one another in whatever aspect that may be, whether it's helping each other get services that we need, advocating for each other on a political or global or university-wide scale, And going back to just talking about it, like, just because people are more, like, the stigma is gone a little bit doesn't mean people are going to be like, yep, I'm suffering from mental health. Let's talk. Like, nobody's going to come out and overtly say that. By creating those spaces that we can talk about it in, and so we can move forward from those issues.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Omar, for speaking with me. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. It was a splendor. No, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. And thank you all for listening in on the show. Thank you so much to Ethan Smith, the creator of our theme music. I have been your host, Sarah Lershani, and you're listening to WHUS Doors 91.7 FM. Have a great rest of your day.